Gatha on opening the sutra, the Dharma incomparably profound and infinitely subtle is rarely encountered even in millions of ages. Now we see it, hear it, receive and maintain it. May we completely realize the Tathagata's true meaning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And good morning to anybody who's new. Welcome. Last week, I came across two things. One was a koan by Roshi Shugan, who is part of the White Plum lineage, which is our lineage. The koan had to do with reincarnation. The other one was in the tricycle, the 50th anniversary of tricycle. It had to do with the discussion between Robert Thurman, and I'm blocking on the other guy's name, but if I remembered it, you would know who he was. The guy whose name I can't remember was talking about what would he say differently in this debate with Robert. And so it brought up, anyway, this issue of reincarnation. I don't know, it popped into my mind, well, who is it that dies and gets reincarnated? So another way of asking that question is, who are you? Who are you? And it occurred to me, I was just thinking about my day, and I get up, and my eyes open, and I'm Carl waking up. And I go in the bathroom before taking a shower, and I look in the mirror, and I'm seeing Carl. And then I take a shower, and I'm Carl taking a shower. And I come out of the shower, and I brush my teeth, and I'm Carl brushing my teeth. I go down to breakfast, and I sit and have breakfast with my wife. And I'm Carl having breakfast with my wife. And then I leave to go to work. And I'm Carl going to work. And so it goes throughout the day. There are literally thousands of ways that we confirm who we think we are. Think of all the different times you've ever looked in a mirror or your reflection in glass when you're walking somewhere. Or have somebody tell you who you are. Oh, Carl, you're so wonderful. Or, Carl, that was a stupid thing to say. But these are all ways of teaching us, of confirming to us who we are, over and over and over again. You know, a lifetime of confirmation of who we think we are. You know, and we cling to this idea of who we think we are. And so then the question arises, who is it that dies? Is it this conglomeration of experiences, of confirmations? Or could it possibly be someone else? Someone else? What the heck does that mean? I already know who I am. How could I be somebody else? So with all this confusion, the question is, are you all ready to die? And, you know, for many of us, when we hear this question about, are you ready to die, it can be very unsettling and difficult to entertain. But the question comes up, if we're not ready to die, if this person that we think we are is not ready to die, is this same person ready to live? Suzuki Roshi is the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center and author of a well-known book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. A lovely book, by the way, for those of you who have never encountered it. And it's a beautiful introduction to Zen practice. And he said, to live in the realm of Buddha nature means to die as a small being, moment by moment by moment. And when he refers to small being, he's referring to the self that's limited, that small being, who we think we are based on endless reflections in mirrors and people's eyes. In the same regard, Japanese Zen master Shiro Bunan, in the first line of a waka poem that he wrote, says, die while alive and be completely dead. Die while alive, but be completely dead. So what are these teachers referring to? What does this mean? Well, it's my belief that they are referring to the death of our idea of who we are, our idea of what we think this present moment is. And so when this idea of who we think we are, who that person in the mirror is, when that idea dies, in Zen we call that the great death. And it's one of the most important aspects of practicing Zen, is being ready to die, being ready for what we call the great death. Zen master Dogen described it this way. The whole universe shatters into 100 pieces. In the great death, there is no heaven, no earth. Once body and mind have turned over, there is only this to say. Past mind cannot be grasped. Present mind cannot be grasped. Future mind cannot be grasped. The whole universe shatters into 100 pieces. All those ideas that have created who we think we are shattered. That's the great death. So there is no heaven. There is no earth. Right? Those are more ideas. And once body and mind have turned over, it means that we have died. That all these ideas that have created the self that we think we are dead. And then he says again, there is only this to say, past mind cannot be grasped, present mind cannot be grasped, and future mind cannot be grasped. So show me your mind. Anybody here can show me your mind? What is mind? In practical terms, if I am grounded in that idea that I am Carl and that you are you, a conglomeration of feedback from the world, then my experience is that we are different and separate. If my mind is still, that is, it stops producing ideas of who I think I am and who I think you are, I have a very different experience of being in the world. Because then I directly experience that we are not separate, that the separation is created by the way in which our mind has been trained. And when all those ideas, all of those looks in the mirror, drop away, then there's nothing to separate us from each other. Right? It's the ideas, it's the process of mind, at least one side of mind, that causes us to feel different and to feel separate. But in reality, it turns out that we are much more than who we thought of looking in that mirror. French philosopher and mathematician René Descartes said famously, I think, therefore I am. I think. Therefore, I am. From the Zen experience, we could say, I don't think, and therefore I am not. Non-thinking, that is, a still mind, is a death to a separate self and a separate reality. So, if you're in Daisan, that's a face-to-face meeting with the teacher, and you enter and sit down, and the teacher says, who are you? Who are you? How will you answer? Well, I'm this guy, I'm this woman that looks in the mirror. And I have red hair, and bushy eyebrows, and a mustache, and a pretty good physique. Right? Is that who you are? Who are you? We also categorize ourselves in terms of gender. And while it's true, there are differences. If we cling to those differences, then we feel separate from each other. And if we are separate from each other, there is no compassion. Kalu Rinpoche expressed it this way: you live in illusions, in the appearance of things, but there is a reality beyond illusion, and you are that reality. When you recognize this, you will realize that you are really nothing. And being nothing, you are everything. Right? Who likes to think of themselves as nothing? Hey, you're nothing. You know, but hey, you're nothing is the wrong attitude. Hey, you're nothing is actually a wonderful compliment. So actually dying this great death, this death of who we think we are, this death of separation, actually brings us to life. It brings us to life in ways we could have never imagined through this process. We realize fully through this process, right? We realize fully who we are. And it's one of the main reasons we practice Zen, is to realize who we are beyond who we think we are. We realize our Buddha nature, what we refer to as our true selves. And this experience transforms how we live our lives. Again, as Suzuki Roshi pointed out, we must die, however, into each moment. It's not just a one-moment deal. We must be alive and we must be continually dying. Moment after moment after moment. Now, there's an important point to be made. We should not be deceived into thinking that one way of seeing is preferential to the other. You know, the relative, the person in the mirror. I'm sorry, let me reverse it. That this way that we're dying into, this way of being, is not better than or preferential to the face in the mirror. That would be just more delusion. And in Zen we say, no leaning. Right? No leaning toward enlightenment, and no leaning toward silence, quiet mind. Right? And no leaning toward our everyday experience of the world, our everyday experience of who we think we are. And the reason why there's no leaning is because both experiences are valid. The world of this and that, of me and you, and the world of non-separation or oneness. The two experiences must be integrated into one reality, or there is the danger that we will continue to function in the world in a lopsided way. My teacher Roshi Kennedy spoke to this when he said, in the Zen world, there is often an emphasis on clarity of mind, on insight. Sometimes, though, it's not how clear your mind is, but how dirty your hands are from working for others. Insight can be a very selfish experience, leaning. But there's that relative world where people are suffering. And so if you stay on your cushion leaning in one direction, that's incomplete. You have to get off your cushion and go into the world. So emptiness, that place of still mind, where there are no concepts being created. Emptiness must function in concert with form. Form is all those relative things that we perceive as the world, people and things. And this insight must be integrated and actualized, right, in the everyday world. So I get off my cushion and I go out into the world, and there are all these separate and different beings. And somebody is hurt. And without thinking about me and that person, I take compassionate action. And that compassionate action, without thinking about me, is coming from a place of oneness. I do it because you are me. We are no different, really, underneath all these differences that we create every day. So moving in the world with compassion is really a celebration of the great death. It's being able to go back into the relative world with an open heart, with a deep connection to everything and everybody around us. 10,000 flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer, snow in winter. If your mind isn't clouded by unnecessary things, this is the best season of your life. Thank you.